Hey, Jose Canseco here. This is to Emily Nyman. Hope I'm saying that right, from David Sampson. It says here, Emily's a huge Yankee fan and also loves the Miami Marlins. She thinks David Sampson was a great team president because he got a ballpark built in Miami. So what? Glad you're a big baseball fan. Like the Yankees? Do you like the Yankees and the Marlins? Wow, what a weird combination. Yankees and Marlins. East Coast, West Coast. All right. Take care and have fun.
Hi, this is Emily Nyman, and you're listening to Breaking Balls. Welcome to episode 98 of Breaking Balls. I'm your host, Emily Nyman. I'm joined by my co-host, John Snyder. You can find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod, or if you're feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call, 631-820-7377. You people heard that right. That was none other than Jose Canseco himself speaking absolute nonsense, and we couldn't get him on the show, not yet, but this is the next best thing, and to be honest, this may have been where I peaked as a baseball personality, so good night, everybody. No, just kidding.
It's all downhill from here.
So what that was a cameo. Now, the other day, I had tweeted, because Jose Canseco has been tweeting a lot about his new cameo account. And I retweeted one of those and said, hey, my birthday is April 8th. If someone doesn't get this for me, I threaten people with, like, you know, misdemeanors or framing them for crimes. So I was, like, half kidding when I said it, but, like, low-key hoping someone would. Then the next day, I get DM'd by the ex-Marlins CEO, David Sampson, and he asked me for an email or a phone number because he had something for me. So I'm like, all right, give him my number. And he texts me the cameo. And dude, I was at my office. I almost shit. I could not fucking believe it.
It was so funny. I was only disappointed because he didn't do it from the car wash. Was what I was really hoping for, was the car wash in the background. But I'll take it. Guys, do yourself a favor. Go look up the whole thing on Emily's Twitter, because the man just jibber-jabbers for a minute and a half about nothing. It's insane. It's amazing.
And, like, what I love about that is he's clearly as lost as it gets, and it's, like, Yes. Genuine. Like, I like the fact that he's so authentic but doesn't give a shit that he is speaking nonsense. Like, I wonder how long it was between the time that David Sampson purchased that and Canseco recorded it, because, like, he couldn't think of anything to say.
Instant.
Half the time.
Instant, because he's keeping his time open for the next cameo to come in.
Dude, I'm still hoping that someone on Twitter gets me another one, and I just have, like, a whole collection of Canseco cameos.
If we get enough audio samples from him, DJ Bingington is an absolute whiz, and we would be able to just, like, piece together an interview with Jose Canseco with us.
I wish that I could see more, because I really love that he immediately... So that dude, David, purchases it, and then Jose immediately, like, roasts him. He's like, oh, you got the stadium belt, so what? Like, is that how he's treating all of the patrons?
That soundbite is eternal. That so what? It's perfect. It's applicable in every situation. It's just magical. And you got the forearm bash, too. I mean, it was everything you could have wanted. Because think about it. Like, yes, it was chaotic, but you don't want Jose Canseco having a boilerplate script ready, reading, like, hi, Emily, thanks for being a fan. No. You want him off the cuff, no idea what he's going to say. It's like giving him a prompt and just going. It's like, whose line is it anyway, featuring Jose Canseco?
Because we got amazing gems like Marlins and a Yankees fan, huh? East Coast, West Coast.
East Coast, West Coast.
East Coast, West Coast. Like, what the fuck is he talking about? I assume he has to think that it was the Mariners, but, like, he's from Miami. He doesn't recognize the name?
I don't know. It makes sense with his worldview. Everything is so weird with him. Like, of course that's how he views the country, literally on its side.
So in classic Breaking Balls fashion, I mean, I feel like I don't even need that qualifier anymore, since this is now multiple weeks in a row that we talk about something and then it inevitably happens 24 hours later.
It's really only notable if there's no fresh news immediately after we record. We assume that there will be, and of course there was.
Freeman went to the Dodgers, Story to the Red Sox, and Correa to the Twins. Now, these were all surprising in their own ways, in my opinion. Freeman was surprising because, like, the Braves didn't sign him at all? Like, I don't know.
Well, apparently so is Freddie Freeman. Like, if you listen to anything that he said afterwards, he was shocked. He said he's hurt. Like, he's offended that Atlanta didn't go for him, which of course means he's going to absolutely go off on the Dodgers.
I know. I low-key, so later in the episode, John and I have our award predictions, and I kind of wanted to pick him as the NL MVP candidate just because I have a feeling that he's going to be in, like, stick it up Atlanta's ass season.
That's what I'm thinking, man. Especially, dude, if they get to a playoff series against each other, that's going to be must-see TV. But the most interesting thing is, like, you know, Freeman got 6 years, Story got 6 years. That Correa deal is insane, especially, and not to rub it in the Yankees' face, but man, if you guys were looking for a stopgap, which is what you got with Kiner Falefa, that's literally the deal that Correa just signed with the Twins. 3 years and an opt-out after every year. Like, as soon as he proves it, he's gone. You know what I mean?
What's weird is that the assumption was, oh, you know, his back must be pretty fucked up for him to not have been able to sign a longer deal somewhere. And if I understand it correctly, Trevor Story's arm is pretty fucked up as well, and he was able to ink a 6-year deal. I mean, granted, the average annual value is significantly lower than that of Correa's deal, and he clearly wanted to go much higher because he probably wanted something around Seager's deal, which was like $32.5 million a year. So, I mean, his AAV is high. It's 35.1, but 3 years, I mean, that's only going to take him potentially until he's like, I guess, like 30 or 31, but you have to assume that he's going to try to go balls to the wall this season and then just sign somewhere else.
Oh, yeah, I don't think he's waiting to opt out if he doesn't have to. You know what I mean? He's only going to do another year in Minnesota if this is not the year to get that contract that he does want. And, I mean, okay, now I am going to rub it in the Yankees' faces a little bit. I could only hold back for so long.
I appreciate
long.
You trying.
I tried. I really did. It looks like they were able to sign him with the money that they cleared by dumping Josh Donaldson on you guys is 100%. What it sure looks like. Yeah.
That is literally exactly what happened. And you know what? At this point, it's like, this might as well happen, you know, like whatever. There's nothing I can do about it. It's frustrating as hell. And man, I just hope that Kiner Falefa is like the best defensive shortstop the Yankees have ever fucking seen, because holy shit. If Correa goes off in Minnesota and Kiner Falefa is like rotating in and out with Gleyber Torres or some shit,
oh my
God, I'm going to lose my mind.
Well, I mean, I think we all knew that Correa was going to wind up playing with Gary Sanchez. It was written in the cards.
Another thing that Yankee fans are now like kind of clamoring for, since they traded Gary, and even though they got Rortvedt and they still have Higashioka, because they clearly are letting the ship sail on having the catcher be a productive offensive position for this team. So they're going all in on defense. Yankee fans are like clamoring for Wilson Contreras from the Cubs. They want to trade for him. But like, why the fuck would they trade Gary then? People are like, oh, because right. He's really good defensively. No, he is not. Like, he's marginally better than Gary. So the Yankees at the end of the day just do like a lateral move at catcher. All of that for nothing.
Right.
Kenley Jansen signed with the Braves, which I thought was kind of funny. It kind of came off as like a petty sign.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're going to take Freeman? We're signing Kenley. And I guess I didn't know how old he was. I didn't even realize, because he only got 1 year, $16 million, and the Dodgers are finished with him. So, like, is right. He actually 38 years old or something? And I just had no idea.
Wait, he's 38?
No, I have no. I'm making up a rumor. Oh, I really don't know.
I have
old
no
he is.
Idea how old he is. So I was extremely set up to be gullible in this conversation.
Castellanos went to the Phillies, and man, that NL East is just stacking up to be something intense.
I know, right? Like, the Mets finally spend some money and shore up the team, and now everyone else in our division is good too. I mean, yeah, freaking Jansen to the Braves, Castellanos to the Phillies, Cruz to the Nationals now. Like, my God, come on, man.
The East is really, like, end loaded. Both of the divisions are unreal. The Central divisions, of course, are, no offense to Central listeners. And the West is, I mean, they got Luke Voit. Yankees traded Luke Voit to the Padres for a former first round pick, a pitcher who apparently touches 103 miles an hour on the gun. He's not a major league ready pitcher yet, but Luke Voit is also a 31-year-old DH who can't really stay healthy. So, like, a lot of Yankee fans were pretty upset by that trade, because Luke Voit was the MLB home run king in the 60-game season. He hit like 22 home runs.
Right.
And listen, I loved Voit. He was great for what the Yankees needed him for. He was pretty good. But, like, what sort of return did people think that they were going to get? And even if they kept him, where is he going to play?
I love that the whole argument boils down to, yeah, but he got hot for 2 months in 2020. Okay.
And they signed Rizzo. I like Rizzo better than Voit. And when you are, like, a power hitter, you are not that great off the bench. Like, having Luke Voit on the bench, you need to get into a groove. You need reps at the plate. And he was not going to get that here. So he would just be a waste of space on a 26-man roster.
Yeah, no, him to San Diego makes all the sense in the world to me. I mean, someone's got to hit now that Tatis isn't playing, right?
Which I still can't believe. I know we already talked about it, but a motorcycle accident? Like, what
Which
the fuck?
One?
The Yankees were unable to avoid arbitration with Aaron Judge, which is... honestly, at this point, more upsetting to me than the Isaiah Kiner-Falefa stopgap over Correa stopgap.
I mean, Hal is cheap. What are you going to do?
I can only hope that, like, and this is probably foolish of me, but I'm low-key hoping that, like, they're still negotiating and it's just going to be a long-term extension as opposed to them nickel and diming Judge and then him just then walking in free agency.
Yeah, that's true. That was kind of a weird timing for all this because, like, the overarching conversation has been like, okay, you know, they got to keep Judge. Like, what kind of extension are they going to give him? And now they're quibbling with him in arbitration? That's not a great look. You know what you guys should do, and this is just my personal advice, is get the wealthiest owner in MLB history. And then just follow me here. And then you can do stuff like, you know, sign Pete Alonso to a year for $7 million. Brandon Nimmo to a year for $7 million. Edwin Diaz for a year for $10.2 million. You know, avoiding arbitration because everyone wants to be there and they'll get paid.
Well, what's fucked up is the Yankees avoided arbitration with like 11 or 12 guys on the roster. But Judge is the one that, like, no, they couldn't.
Judge isn't a priority, though, right?
He apparently came to the table with 21. The Yankees came with 17. So that's pretty far apart, especially from what I was seeing of the other players around the league that were unable to avoid arbitration with their respective teams. Now, it's not like they're sitting there countering with those numbers. They submit them blindly. Like, they don't know who is going to say what. So it's not like, fuck you, Judge, you're $17 million. But clearly, they undervalue him according to him. And me, and everyone with a fucking brain.
Not me, though. No, yeah, me too. Even I'll agree with that.
And I'm honestly confused about arbitration. Now, this year is different because usually...
You think that's not intentional?
I know. Everything is fucking confusing about this sport. The league loves that. But arbitration usually ends in January. The deadline's usually in the middle of January, and then the hearings are scheduled for February. And then, like, I think it's right before spring training, or then over the course of spring training, you'll hear about the arbitration meetings, whatever. Now those deadlines were obviously moved because of the lockout. So the deadline was yesterday, but they don't have a date set for the hearings. And apparently, if the teams and players don't agree to a salary before opening day, the player will be paid at the rate proposed by the club and salary would be adjusted retroactively if necessary. What the fuck is the point of the deadline?
Right, yeah. And that's really strange to me that they wouldn't, like, with all these other dates that they need to have in place, like, so pick a new time frame for these hearings. Like, what? Like, oh, we'll do it eventually. We'll pay you if you owe, you know, if we owe you money eventually, we'll get back at you. Like, what the hell is that?
And I guess it's just like, this is the deadline for the blind submission of, like, the dollar amount. Because if they can still negotiate, I don't know. It's confusing to me. I'm sure it's because there's so many every year that there has to be some sort of structure to it or else where does it end? But it does seem kind of semantical if they can then just continue negotiating and hopefully come to an agreement before the actual arbitration hearing.
Semantics in baseball?
We're giving Hal and the Yankees a lot of shit for being cheap despite the fact that they have, you know, top three payroll, whatever.
Right.
And especially today, Passan tweeted the top five teams that spent the least amount of money in free agency this year. And the number one team, the A's, they spent $0. Zero.
The fire sale is total and all-encompassing. There is no room for money to be spent there.
My favorite part about it being the A's is that they were one of the teams, I'm pretty sure, that were embroiled in a lawsuit with the union over a misappropriation of, like, their revenue share that the league wanted dropped before they'd agree to any deal. So it's like, and now they didn't spend shit in free agency.
Is there some kind of thing with them where they're just like, they're like throwing a tantrum until they let them move the team. Like, as long as we're in Oakland playing in the Coliseum, I'm not spending money on the team. In fact, you want A's players? Give me some shitty trades. Give me some offers. Let's go. You got them.
That is basically what, like, the president or something said. One of them, I should have gotten the quote. The president said something along those lines, like, well, you know, this is going to continue to happen until they move the stadium. And it was like, have you ever seen the American Dad episode where they're on the plane and Roger's dressed like a little girl and then, like, he goes missing?
Yes. Yeah.
And the air marshal is like,
all right, people, I'm done screwing around. There's a human life at stake. A little girl. And until she's returned to me safely, I'm going to kill a passenger every 60 seconds.
I'm going to murder one hostage per hour until this little girl is found. That's the kind of threat that it felt like to me, to the fans. Like, this is going to continue to be shitty until we move.
They just put their foot down until they alienate their entire fan base, and they finally do get to move, and nobody shows up to the new stadium.
I love how these billionaire owners and teams, they will whine and cry and not spend money unless the taxpayers of their fan base then foot this multi-billion dollar bill to build a stadium. Like, what a fucking racket.
Well, yeah, like what? They're going to suddenly want to spend money on something? Like, it's the whole thing is like you spend money to buy the team and then you spend as little as possible moving forward. That's the strategy, apparently.
And I know the Mets have the richest owner in the sport, but are they
Can you say that again?
Repeat, the Mets have the richest owner in the sport, yet Michael Conforto remains on the free agent list. Curious.
Well, not that curious when you...
Not at all, actually.
I was gonna say, I mean, we have the outfielders to replace him. If anything, I would point my finger more so at Boris than I would at any ownership. And it's not just Conforto when you think about it, because like right off the bat, it kind of looks like Conforto probably should have taken that qualifying offer that he turned down. In retrospect. And, you know, hindsight is 20/20, sure. But you look at some other Boris guys, like Freeman didn't get the money that he wanted. You know, he wasn't going to get it from the Braves, apparently. But even the Dodgers, he wanted more money for those 6 years. And Correa didn't get the long deal that he wanted. He had to get that, you know, kind of creative stopgap position with the Twins with all those opt-outs. So, Boris, what are you doing, man? Like, you're supposed to be the guy, like, getting all these deals. And especially, I mean, you know, I'm not going to pretend, obviously, that Conforto is on the level of those other two guys. But as all clients of his, you would think that, you know, as soon as all this was over, you know, we got 7 years, comfortable money, all that stuff. And it just didn't happen. So, what's going on, Scott? What's up?
To be honest, I feel like a lot of it has to do also with obvious collusion among the owners. Like, all of these free agents just sit on the market and then they all sign lower or undervalued deals at like the same time. And they're like, no, we promise we're not colluding. We're just in the same wavelength.
Right.
We're all Aries.
If we wait 36 hours to announce any of these, any sense of collusion will be wiped away from the public eye.
Tommy Pham is also still on the free agent block. I mean, there's an entire list of guys, and there are a lot of recognizable names on there, but granted, a lot of them are pitchers, and a lot of them are like 35-year-old plus pitchers, so it kind of makes sense why they are just hanging out there waiting. But guys like Conforto, Pham, it's like, what's going on? No one can use those bats? No one?
And that's, going back to those older pitchers, that's kind of like the little like personal adjustment that we all need to do every offseason. It's like, because you're so used to seeing these names and, you know, automatically, like, oh, like, you know, Clayton Kershaw is a big name. It's like, well, he was a big name. And now he's, you know, it's a little bit different now. And I had that with, oh my God, I'm blanking out. There was one of the guys, older guys that signed. I was like, oh, that's huge. And I was like, wait a minute, he's 38. Like, no, it's not.
Wait a minute, he just signed for $5 million.
Right.
Brett Gardner still is on the free agent list. I hesitate at saying he's notable just because he is, and not to clown Gardner too much.
Notable on a New York-based baseball podcast, I'll say.
I'll take that. Thank you. The Blue Jays supposedly put a flyer out on Gardner. I mean, seeing him in any other uniform would be very strange, but if he went to a division rival, like, I hell would have frozen over. There's no way he does that, right?
No, and they don't need him. I mean, speaking of the Blue Jays, they just extended Chapman for another 2 years. So
that's right.
Their lineup is so good if they're all healthy.
And not to bring up the stopgap situation again for the Yankees, but a name that stuck out to me on that free agent list was Greg Bird, who, if anyone listening remembers, was one of the Yankees' former future phenoms. He was truth.
Yeah, I know I knew that name, yeah.
And he just didn't pan out in New York. He then went to Colorado, I believe. And, you know, he's obviously, he just didn't pan out at the major league level like people thought he would. He was injured a lot, and that's all it takes. So, like, this is rolling the dice. And not that guys like Correa can't get hurt. Obviously, something's up with him. But that's the dice roll with, like, we're banking on the homegrown guys. They're going to be great. Volpe's going to be amazing. Like, we've heard this many times about many different guys who get traded away, just literally get released, yada yada. And that happens far more often than the homegrown talent becomes elite.
And I could be wrong about this, but it seems like the Yankees are going all in on guys like Volpe in a way they didn't even with Bird. You know, like Bird was like, oh, he's supposed to, but you know, they got Severino, they signed Cole, like all that stuff. Like they were prepared for a contingency plan. Volpe is the contingency plan now. Like if he's not great in a few years, This offseason looks like a complete travesty in retrospect. Not just, what did Max call it last week? Abysmal. It goes from abysmal to like travesty.
Obviously, Judge was a much lauded prospect as well. So was Sanchez. So was Gleyber Torres. But they came up like right on the heels of the old guards and the end of their careers. They came up in 2016. So no one was expecting anything. There wasn't that much. Well, relatively speaking, there wasn't that much pressure on them. Whereas now, the amount of pressure being put on Anthony Volpe is just like, why are they doing this to this fucking kid? They could have gotten someone like Correa or Story and then still had him come up in a few years and be the guy. Now it's like, he better fucking be that guy.
I know that was rhetorical and now it's my turn to talk, but yeah, that, like, what? I mean, hey, and who knows? Maybe it sorts out. Maybe he is that good. Maybe it all comes together. But, like, that is, it's unfair to him at the end of the day as a player. You know what I mean? And we know how much of baseball is mental. You know, like, your head can fuck up your entire game. And some guys, you know, it's enough of a struggle for them that they're not able to stay in the league. You know? So, I mean, you take a kid who, you already, when you're a highly touted prospect, there's more pressure than a normal player. You know, than an underdog who just keeps, you know, surpassing expectations, yada, yada, yada. That's feel good in its own way. But a kid like Volpe, man, it's like, there's already pressure on him. And now you're saying, before he even comes up and proves anything, like, hey, you're the guy. As soon as you come up, you're the guy. Like, oh, man, that's, I was going to say, I can't even imagine. It's like, well, obviously I can't. But, like, it's hard to, it's hard to relate to, man. Like, that's insane as far as pressure goes.
What I thought was kind of funny, and listen, he's probably closer to the bigs than I'm giving him credit for, but I couldn't help but feel like it was a little too on the nose. So on Sunday in the Yankees spring training game, Volpe was, he got his spring training invite and he played in Sunday's game. And it was like the first time he wore the Yankee pinstripes because, you know, he's been on the single A team that's not the Yankees. So it was a big deal. And it was right on the heels of like the Story and the Correa signings.
Right.
So it felt like they were trotting him out. Like, here's the guy. Like, you casual fans that haven't been paying attention really don't know him, but this is your guy. Who cares about those guys, Correa and Story? This 20-year-old is the truth right here. And it was just like, oh, God.
Do you remember how he did?
I do remember him fielding a clean routine ground ball to end an inning. So obviously World Series dynasty. Multiple World Series titles incoming. Speaking of that broadcast, though, so Cameron Maben is a new addition to the Yes booth. And I got to say, that game, it was him, David Cone, and Michael Kay. Wow, he was fucking delightful. The three of them, including Kay, were really, really good. I mean, David Cone is a pro and one of the best in the league. But Maben is going to be great this year. I'm pretty fucking excited for it.
I'll take that even a step further, because you know me, how much I mean, I know you're not a Michael Kay fan. I have trouble listening to Michael Kay. I caught the day after where there was no Cone. It was just Maben and Kay, and it was great. Like, he brought out a side of Kay that I just hadn't seen, and Kay just felt like a normal guy talking about baseball, which is what Maben does. Like, Maben, it's like hearing somebody our age that knows what they're talk about baseball. What else could you ask for? Like, no offense to Paul O'Neill. Okay, a little offense to Paul O'Neill. This dude's boring. Like, yeah. There's nothing to add. Maben is just fun to listen to. As you guys know, the Yankee games are always on the big TV here during our production meetings with the sound on. So it's a much better proposition this year than last. when I'm missing out on Gary, Keith, and Ron.
So before we go to the voicemails, during that broadcast with Maben, Kay, and Cone, Cone told a really funny story that I didn't know. So apparently when he left the Mets, he had left, like, when he moved out of his Queens apartment, he had left some of his jerseys there. So he goes back and a new tenant had already moved in. And David Cone was, people already knew who he was. He was a name. The tenant in that apartment made him buy back his own jerseys that he had left behind accidentally when he moved out like a week prior.
That's great.
It's just such a classic New York tale, a coming of age New York tale.
Yeah, nobody gives a fuck who you are.
And on that note, let's get right into the voicemails.
No. We are not getting right into the voicemails. You thought, listen to me. You thought you were going to get away without talking about that sealed Yankees letter. Oh. I think not, Miss Nyman. I think not. Spill it. Let's go.
Holy shit, dude. That may have been the greatest segue of all time, and it was totally accidental. Wow. I swear I didn't mean to gloss over this Yankee letter, but Astros Twitter is all abuzz, no pun intended, because the Yankee letter is officially going to be unsealed, according to some judge, and they think there's going to be some findings
in there.
They got
Aaron Judge to do it, like, ceremoniously in the outfield at Yankee Stadium.
It's been hinging on his decision this whole time. The judge, finally. So I'm going to read an excerpt from an article that came out about it, because this is, in my opinion, the most important part as far as, like, what this is going to mean for the Yankees and what's going to come out from this letter. The U.S. District Court Judge Jed Rakoff had previously ruled that the letter should be unsealed because much of what was in the letter had already been publicly acknowledged by Major League Baseball. What do people think they're going to find out from this letter?
That every team cheats?
And, like, the Yankees have already been fined for what they did. And I guess I'm confused. If anyone from the Astros fandom listening can call in or clarify, and I swear I'm not being glib when I ask this, like, what do you think is going to come out in this letter that people don't already know? Like, we all know the Yankees got embroiled in some iPhone or misuse of the dugout phone or whatever they did. So what else could possibly be in there that isn't already known?
I'll be glib. Astros fans have nothing to talk about except this cheating scandal from 5 years ago. So surprise me. Give me a take that doesn't come back to the Astros cheating. And with that, let's get right to the voicemails.
Our first voicemail is from Bubak.
Uneventful offseason, in my opinion. Not really sure what the fuck Cashman's doing, nor how. I don't know. Got their heads up each other's asses or something. I just don't get it. I mean, shit, we just traded fucking Luke Boyd for a starting pitcher who probably isn't ready for the big leagues for another fucking 6 years. Like, oh my God, he threw 102 mile an hour fastball when he was in high school. So fucking what? Like, CeCe threw 99 when he was in high school too, and in single A, they're like, you don't even know how to stand on the fucking rubber. So, I don't know what the fuck's going on anymore. It used to be in cash, God we trust. Well, that's out the fucking window, because can't trust him now, because we make stupid fucking moves, you know, our areas of need was shortstop and starting pitcher, right? And what do? We go out and get a 36-year-old fucking Josh Donaldson, 36-year-old fucking punk. Mind you, I'm still on that. And then I still don't have starting pitching because now Herman's going to start the season on the IL. What in the flying fuck is going on? Guys, I don't know. I'm at a loss for words. I don't know what to tell. What to say, what to tell you, I don't know. Other than, I guess I gotta go. I love you guys. Love the show. Love everything you're doing. Keep it up. Bubak. Hey-hoot!
I know you, Bubak, and a lot of other Yankee fans are upset about the Voit trade. We had mentioned it earlier in the episode. But if Cashman could have gotten a better return, he would have. You know what I mean? I know Cashman is under a lot of fire right now from the fans. You know, I'm not happy either. A lot of people aren't happy. Bubak, obviously you aren't either. But that was the best return that you could possibly expect for someone like Voit. And if you don't get rid of him, where does he play? Because he can't be your everyday first baseman because he fucking sucks at first base. And who are you going to pick, him or Giancarlo Stanton as your DH? I know you're not going to say Voit. So where does that leave him? as the odd man out. He had to go. There's no place for him on this roster.
Thank you, Emily. I think you're wrong. I have nothing to add to that. Just two quick non sequitur things. I, for one, cannot wait until at some point in midseason when Donaldson has strung together a few good moments for the Yankees to hear Bubak call in with some effusive praise for him. It's coming. Everybody listen. I'm calling it now. And the other thing, just because this soundbite will never go away, all I could hear when he said, you know, the kid was throwing 100 in high school.
So what?
So what?
Yeah, how many people do you think throw 100? Not that many.
Right, yeah, that's not easy to do in high school.
Bubak, thank you for your call, and we love you too, buddy. Our next call is from our stat and pitching guru, Max.
This is Max Greenfield calling again for a second straight week. I want to sort of alter my comments that I made a week ago about the offseason for the Yankees. I still think you can describe it as abysmal, you know, purely based off expectations versus reality. But I think it's abysmal because the Yankees had the opportunity to become the best team in baseball, you know, by signing Correa or trading for Olsen or signing Freddie Freeman and then getting some starting pitching. I still believe that they will ultimately acquire starting pitching just because you can never have enough. But, you know, they had that opportunity to become the best team in baseball and then just didn't take it because they didn't want to spend the money to do so. And I think that's what makes it abysmal, is that they're still a good team. They got better. I still think they're, you know, arguably the second best team in the American League, you know, second best team in their division behind Toronto, who I think is the best team in the American League. But it's just that opportunity to go all in, you know, make this the best team in the league, and they just, you know, didn't take it. And I also think that puts unfair pressure on Oswaldo Peraza and Anthony Volpe for just having to come up and produce right away. Don't think that's fair. So just wanted to alter those comments. You know, if you're a Yankee fan, I still think this is a good team and something to root for. And anybody who describes the Yankees pitching as mediocre has no idea what they're talking about. So thanks again. Have a great rest of your week.
Yeah, I mean, what they're doing to Volpe, and you're right, we forgot to mention Peraza earlier, is just criminal to me. I mean, even Aaron Judge, who can't say enough good things about him as a player, when he came up in 2016 in August, if everyone remembers correctly, he was abysmal, to use your adjective, Max. He struck out like every single at bat. Not that batting average is used as a barometer in the game today, but just for the context of this conversation, it was like 108 or something obscene. So what happens when that is Volpe? He comes up in August at some point and he's not good, but they're in a real push for October as opposed to 2016 when they weren't making the playoffs, so no one really gave a shit.
I think Max, as always, did a great job of just cutting right to the core of what happened. It took us 5-10 minutes to say what he said in one sentence, which is essentially, yeah, they could have, you know, spending some money could have made them the best team in baseball. And instead, Hal said, it's good enough. We'll see if it is.
Max, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from James.
Emily, John, it's your boy, James. So I got a question for both of you. Met a Yankee question. Are the Yankees actually better this year than they were last year? And the Met question is, are the Mets one of the favorites to represent the National League in the World Series?
Yes, James, the Yankees definitely are better than they were last year. I know that they didn't make too many sexy moves and we are complaining about them a lot, but they were a 92-win team last year and they've shored up their defense. They added another big bat to their lineup. So I think that it's safe to say that, yes, they are a better team than they were last year.
And James, I would say yes to your second question as well. It's, you know, like Mets, Braves, Dodgers are in that conversation, I would say.
And thanks to the new playoff format, the Braves.
So is everybody
Mets,
else, I guess.
Everyone's getting into the playoffs like Oprah, like, you get a car. Yeah, and right. You get a car.
You get a playoff berth. And you get a playoff berth.
James, thank you for your call. Our next call is from Juan.
Hey, 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 this is at Juan Vante. I just want to go over expectations, right? I grew up at a time where the dynasty was ours. And that was primarily, in my opinion, without research, just from what I remember watching and enjoying. That was all due to how we built and developed our core players from the minor leagues. I believe what we're seeing now is a shift back to those principles, and definitely worth discussing. The sexy name is simply just a sexy name. Doesn't mean that we're going to win a World Series. Thank you, Em.
Juan, you're absolutely right. There are no guarantees in this game, and that's what makes it really fucking frustrating, because you can get a whole team of all-stars and not win shit. I mean, the Dodgers have only come away with one title, despite the fact that they have had a star-studded lineup for basically the last, like, 15 years. And that's baseball, right? But I will say, proven major league talent, like the free agents that were on the market, is not a one-to-one comparison with a elite top prospect. Because, like I had mentioned earlier, how many elite top prospects have there been that then just fizzled out at the pro level for one reason or another, whether it's because they couldn't stay on the field, so they didn't get their shot, they just were not as good at this level, and I'm sure the number is fucking countless at this point, because way more of them don't pan out or are just a decent major leaguer, because the bar is a lot lower in Major League, and that's not the term. That's for lack of a better term, because it's not that the bar is lower than it is in other sports. It's just because of the nature of this sport that offense isn't the way it is in other sports. So the guys that are elite, they can't dominate and they can't maintain possession to, like, dominate offensively. So because of that, an elite prospect may just mean that, hey, he's going to be able to stay in the league for 10 years. He may be a DJ LeMahieu, but he's in the league for 10 years, and there's a lot to be said for that, because most guys only last like 2 or 3 years.
Well, you know, you notice in the other three major American sports, you have the occasional sure thing come along. You really don't get those in baseball. Maybe Bryce Harper was touted as a sure thing and then was, but it's such a rarer thing because there's so many more intangibles, like you were saying.
Yeah, I mean, the only three off the top of my head that I can think of in the last few years, and this is maybe a little bit of bias, but Harper, Trout, A-Rod, prospects that were so good that they couldn't really justify keeping them in the minor leagues. They were just absolutely rolling their opponents, so they came up at 18, 19 years old. Whereas, how often is that happening? I mean, Volpe, he's only 20, so I'm not trying to speed up his clock at
20?
All.
20? He's washed.
But still, it's like, are they going to bring him up prematurely? Because now they're like, well, we have Cole, we have Stanton, we have Judge. We need this guy here. Kiner Falefa isn't cutting it at the plate. And it's just, I feel like this is a fucking train barreling down the tracks and there's a brick wall coming and we all see it, but we're just pretending we don't. Juan, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Jeremy.
Hey, Emily. It's Jeremy, jhodge30 on Twitter. Just going to talk about the Yankees really quick. I'm happy with the moves that they made, but I think they need to get pitching. If they can get one or two starters, maybe one of those guys from the A's, I feel like they'll be fine. They're going to score runs. I think last year they struggled a little bit, but I think they've got the talent to score the runs. I don't understand Yankees Twitter being all upset over certain things. I particularly wanted Correa, but whenever that didn't happen, I saw what they were doing. I'm fine with it. I do think they need one more starter at least. I think the bullpen's going to be good. I think with the way the playoffs are set up, they'll get in the playoffs, and then it's just kind of a crapshoot. Love the podcast so far. Thanks for challenging me. Talk to you soon.
Jeremy, I think that's a great take. I mean, I want to Correa too. At this point, it is what it is. I'm over it, kind of. And as far as the pitching, they can always use another arm. I mean, you can never have too much pitching, and you can never have too much elite pitching. But with that being said, the 2021 Yankees were a 92-win team in large part thanks to the pitching. They had a top five staff. They rank in the top five or the top 10 of basically every major category for pitching, and they haven't gotten worse. They haven't lost anybody. And I know Herman is out for at least the beginning of the season, but he missed half a year last year, not to mention he's a scumbag. So, yeah, I hope they add Manaea. I hope they add Montas. I mean, we already clowned the A's earlier. They're certainly not doing anything with them, so they might as well trade them to the Yankees. But even if they don't, this pitching staff is still elite. The pitching staff is still going to get this team to where it needs to be. And like you said, if they can hit, because that's what was missing last year, but if they can get their shit together for the entire season, then I think that we're going to be looking back at this offseason and having a good laugh about all of our reactions. Jeremy, thank you for your call. Our last call is from Quinn.
Hey, it's Quinn. So I may have jumped the gun last week saying that there was going to be a flurry of free agent signings in the first 10 minutes of the lockout ending. Yeah, I didn't expect Correa to go to anywhere that's not the Yankees. Certainly not a team that finished in last place last year at 1 a.m. local time. Also, the ghost runner coming back, that kind of sucks, I think. I mean, I guess the players want it, and I kind of get that they don't want to use up their entire bullpen in an 18-inning game. But I wish they would at least wait until the 11th or 12th before they do that. I don't think they should start it as soon as the first nine innings end. If anything, if they were going to keep one of the two new rules, I wish they would have kept the 7-inning doubleheaders, because that doesn't happen that often, and it doesn't really change the whole nature of the game. But just throwing a runner out there, that I don't like it.
Yeah, I agree, Quinn. I'm not crazy about the runner on second rule. I also wish that it wouldn't start until at least like the 11th or 12th inning. Give them a shot to play regular baseball and extras. But they're doing it because it happens all the time. And I get, like, I wish that they did the 7-inning doubleheaders, because that doesn't happen as much. But I think that's kind of the idea, is that the extra innings happen a lot, and the shortened spring training. There's going to be a shitload of injuries, I'm sure, to a lot of pitchers because of that shortened spring training. So might as well try to mitigate that as best they can, because, hey, we're all about players on this podcast. And the more players get hurt, the less value they then have. So then it's like, I feel like the ownership kind of wants this. It's like, are you guys sure you want that extra runner? Because we're totally okay with throwing your arms right into the ground.
Right. Well, again, let's remember, it's only for this year. And like you said, it's only because they had such a weird, not only shortened spring training, but like not everybody did the normal ramp up that they would do. You know, when you have your deadlines in mind and you can, you know, plan backwards from there, you know, start in January, February, whatever the hell you do. Because let's also remember, it's in tandem with the rosters expanding from 26 to 28. So it's all just for this year because of the lockout. Again, it's one of those things where it's like, all right, we get a full season of baseball. One more year of the extra inning shit? Yeah, okay, fine. And that was also part of what we're calling the Shohei Ohtani rule, the agreement between MLB and MLBPA. That was the less fun part, the ghost runners. But the cool part is they're basically letting, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong here, I believe that Ohtani, when he pitches, is essentially allowed to act as the DH simultaneously, so that when he leaves the game as a pitcher, he can continue hitting. Which,
yeah,
I mean,
that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it gives a very specific advantage to one team. But I try to look at it in terms of it's encouraging that kind of two-way play. So our odds of, and hey, it's a crapshoot, but our odds of getting another Ohtani down the road are increased if that's something that the league is open to, as opposed to a kid, you know, talented in both departments saying, well, why am I going to do that when the league's going to make me specialize at some point anyway? So it's kind of encouraging in that way.
And speaking of the reigning American League MVP, Shohei Ohtani, now that we are rapidly approaching opening day, John and I thought, what better time than to release our award predictions for the 2022 season? Now, we have everyone's favorites, the MVP and the Cy Young Award. Last year, we did Rookie of the Year and Manager, I'm pretty sure, but Manager, who gives a shit? And Rookie of the Year, I mean, last year I literally just like Googled an article, yeah, because I don't follow the minor leagues. I'm not sure who's eligible this year for it, and what their service time is, so why lie?
I realized I'd be doing the same thing. I'd be like Googling top lists of you know, new players, and like, oh, let me just pick one. I don't know.
So we're not going to bother with lying to you guys. We'll lie to you about other things, but not this. And also, well, you know what? First, let's kick it off with our MVPs. John, who do you have as your 2022 American League MVP?
The fan base is going to hate me for this, but I got Carlos Correa putting in the year that he wants to put in and opting out and getting paid next offseason.
I was tempted to pick him too, and I'm glad you did, because I have a feeling that he's going to go off this year. And what better team than to do it on the Twins, who are totally irrelevant.
Right. And they'll still lose to the Yankees.
I picked Vladdy. He was oh so close last year. He lost out to Ohtani. deservedly so, I'd say. But I have a feeling that he's going to turn it up again and have another unreal year, unfortunately for me as a Yankees fan. But it's still impressive as a baseball fan. What about your NL MVP?
I'm going to continue playing the heel role here, and I'm going to say Freddie Freeman on the Dodgers is going to get the NL MVP.
I can't wait to see the mental gymnastics of Braves fans hating him or saying he didn't deserve it, even if he actually killed it. Like, I'm really looking forward to that meltdown. My NL MVP, this one is basically a shoo-in, in my opinion, Juan Soto. I think that he's just going to be unreal from here until eternity. So all gas, no brakes. All right, for our Cy Young Awards, for
Jacob DeGrom. Sorry, I couldn't.
Well, that is literally so. Before our episode, we were getting ready to record, and we're both like getting our shit together. And then John and I had the same thought: like, we are both picking DeGrom and Cole because they are once again the favorites for this category, as they were last year, and we both picked them last year. So because that is too much of a gimme, we're going to go with some dark horses who we think have a shot. So, John, you want to kick us off with your AL dark horse Cy Young?
Dark horses as in like top five pitchers in their respective leagues. But yeah, so for AL, I got Shane Bieber staying healthy and bringing a Cy Young home to the newly christened Cleveland Guardians.
That would be kind of cool because then he would be the last Cleveland Indian to have won a Cy Young and then the first Cleveland Guardian to have won a Cy Young.
Yeah, it kind of bridges the two generations or whatever, something. I don't know.
My AL Cy Young dark horse is Sean Manea, and that's mostly because I'm hoping he gets traded to the Yankees.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. What about your NL?
I'm going to go with the Dodgers theme and say Walker Buehler.
Fuck, are you serious? Because I said
sure
Walker Buehler.
And you asked me first, so.
Dude, I feel the same way. I feel like he was so close last year, and he was in the conversation for a while, and then just kind of fell off.
All right, fine. Max Scherzer.
I don't know. Swear to God, I almost put Scherzer too, but then I thought I thought I'd get shit for that because like he's won like fucking four of them. So is he really a dark horse at this point?
No, none of these guys that we've mentioned are true dark horses for this. They could all do it.
I low key wanted to say Severino or Cortez Jr. for the AL dark horse, but I felt like it was just going to be a bad omen and Sevy would make like one start and then be out.
Not even a dark horse anymore. That's like a different animal entirely.
That about wraps it up for Breaking Balls this week. We want to thank all of our listeners. You guys are awesome. And of course, our callers. Anyone else listening wants to get in on the fun, feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. You can also find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod. And we want to thank our amazing producer and engineer, DJ Bingington. You can find him on Twitter as well, at DJ B-I-N-G-I-N-G-T-O-N. And we will catch you guys next week.